you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen. Damn it, I still have intro inadequacy. I still do. I think I painted myself into a corner by ending the recorded intro with "This is You May Have Seen." See, now it's stupid if I just go, "Welcome to You May Have Seen," because I just said it. So I don't know. I'll work on it. What are you doing? We're back again. We are talking with my good friend Guy Olivieri, who I hadn't seen in years. This is another catch-up session. He and his husband just moved here to Charlotte from New York City, and we talk all about that. We talk about working behind the scenes of soap operas. Remember soap operas? Yeah, stories of COVID humanity, and making the transition from the Big Apple to the Queen City, and so much more. So just listen. You know what to do. Here we go.
Welcome.
Hi. Is it happening?
It is. Well, sure. Not that that means anything, because that's the beauty of editing. But I mean, right. Welcome to Charlotte. Welcome to human beings. Are you showing me something?
I'm just trying to turn my phone off.
Oh, okay.
And I have not turned it off in a while. Right. I forgot how to do it, I'm going to be honest.
How, I mean, have you had any contact with any other human beings aside from the Jersey Mike's girl and, like, since you've been here?
Well, I mean, just the slightest bit.
Yeah.
We go shopping and stuff like that, and that's about it.
When you say shopping, you just mean grocery shopping.
Grocery shopping, yeah. And like we went furniture shopping because we moved here, kind of.
Oh, okay.
With New York apartments worth of furniture, and had to fill up like an actual human being's sized apartment with furniture.
What are you guys in? Are you in like a two bedroom?
We're in a two bedroom, which is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first 3 months, we're like, what do people do with a second room?
And are you paying significantly less?
Well, we were in a rent-controlled situation in New York, so we had a good deal. But still, it's the price difference from everything is shocking.
Shocking.
Like, I feel abused.
After all these years?
Yeah.
You like, realize what was going on?
Our first trip to the store, and I was like, that can't be right. Is that what cereal actually costs?
For normal people?
Yeah. It continues to shock me.
Yeah.
I'd be like, it's free, put it in the cart. Yeah.
No, it happened to me, like, obviously, you know, I lived here before I was in New York. Yeah. And, you know, I spent the almost 4 years in New York paying New York prices. And, like, even things like beer, going to a bar. At that time, beer, you know, getting a pint of beer in a bar in New York was at $6 a pop. And I would come back here and it was like $3. Now, I know it's not the same now. Prices have gone up here. But still, I was like, I couldn't get over it.
It's shocking. It's shocking. Like, we would just get, like, standard bad takeout food, and it's half the price here.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Where are you from? I don't know.
I'm from Jersey. I'm from North Jersey.
You are from Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know that you've got North Carolina ties, and I don't think we ever had that conversation.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in North Jersey. I went to Chapel Hill, to UNC Chapel Hill.
Right.
And then moved to Memphis for a couple of years, and then right back up to the New York, New Jersey area.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm just wondering how it has been for you so far since you got here, because I know your husband works for Bank of America, and while it's a huge company, under these circumstances, has he been working from home? Has he had any human interaction, once again, aside from Zoom or...
He's been working from home.
Yeah.
They're going back in September is their plan. He hasn't.
Oh, really?
So, you know, like, the pandemic hit, and as my career ground to a halt,
sure.
Mark got offered a job opportunity down here.
Yep.
And so that prompted us moving down here.
Okay, so he did get an offer. He didn't pursue it and say, hey, let's get the hell out of town. Let me check and see what's in charge.
No. It kind of all happened coincidentally.
Really?
And, you know, we were probably going to leave the city at some point. Maybe we were going to move to the suburbs outside of the city. But when this came, it was like, this seems like the universe is telling us this is what's next. So we came on down. And I mean, like, I, having gone to Chapel Hill, I am incredibly fond of North Carolina, of like the entire culture.
Right.
I'm even having like sense memories of smells that I haven't had since college. And
I'm sure.
It feels really nice.
I'm sure.
And you know, if you go to UNC Chapel Hill, you wind up with friends all over North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So not a ton of people I know in Charlotte, but in a couple of hours in every direction, I have so many people I can't wait to visit once I can.
All right, so we're going to get back into this in just a second. So just to get the podcast part of the interview going, Guy, where may we have seen you?
Oh, you might have seen me in dozens upon dozens of commercials. I was on Homeland. I was on The Blacklist. Mm-hmm. I was on Blue Bloods. Mm-hmm. Gossip Girl. I'm old enough that I had been on some soaps. Yeah.
I love that. I'm old enough to have been on some soaps.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, on New York soaps. Now they're all out of New York.
Which ones did you do? I did As the World Turns.
I did All My Children and One Life to Live.
Oh, my God.
Yes. My first line on TV was on One Life to Live, and it happened the same day as Hurricane Katrina happened. So,
oh, wow.
Like, I had people all over the country watching me say one line on One Life to Live, and then the news cut in.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, why me? And I was like, that's a terrible thing to say. But you know, they rerun. I don't know if you know this. If they get cut during the day, they rerun them in the middle of the night. I got a note saying it was going to be at like 4:30.
Okay.
And I sent out an email and I was like, if you love me, you're going to be watching TV at 4:30 for my first line on TV.
That is great. What did you, what were you on One Line?
I was a customer.
Of course.
I think my line was, I didn't order that.
Yeah. I was a customer. A customer on As the World Turns. I was in a restaurant. It was me and my girlfriend, and some kind of furry rodent ran across the restaurant or diner or whatever the hell it was. Yeah.
I'm so glad I got to do it. I also was an extra a ton of times. I wound up working in their casting office. I was like an assistant for a while. I loved that environment. I loved how, you know, it was silly, but nobody was judgy about it, and mm-hmm. how incredibly professional people were, and like the stars had the 9 to 5 hours, and the newer people were like there in the weird times.
Yeah.
And like, I just loved the way it ran.
It was nuts. Like my one and only experience with that was just, I could not believe what I was seeing. Like, this machine and how it ran was absurd to me. It really was absurd. And the responsibility on the main actors, the main cast members, is outrageous.
Like, there was truly one moment outrageous. Where there was an intense scene between two of the women who I recognized their faces. They've been on the show forever. And they just had to get each other wound up before the scene. And so they just, clearly they had been working together forever.
Sure.
So they sat down, cross-legged across from each other, looked in each other's eyes, did some deep breathing, both started crying, and launched into the scene. And I was like, that's how you do it. Like, that was very inspiring to me. That, like, you know, even though they would have to admit that scene was silly. They had some silly stuff to do, but they had to be wound up for it. And I was like, that looks like so much fun.
Wow.
I love it. It's just, all these people had their techniques down. You know, they got what they needed to. I remember one day an actor was very, very hungover. Like negligently hungover.
Right.
And like, everybody, it must happen a lot. Nobody seemed to judge him for it. And I was like, he's not going to be able to do the scene. And he got up to do the scene. First take, everything was perfect. He just crumpled back into a ball on the floor, and that was it. And I was like, that's professionalism.
No
I love
joke.
It.
Yeah. Because of course, the beauty of that, again, the soap opera machine, is that unless you completely fuck it up and are bleeding, they're moving on. We got it.
Yeah.
Yep. We got it. That's good. We're going.
I miss it. I wish I could still be a part of it, but they're all in LA now. You know, one of our comfort foods during the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So New York got scary, and we, the day that they announced they were running out of PPE in New York, we wound up moving to New Jersey to the house that I grew up in my parents still own and had recently had renovated. So we were... So it was kind of like an empty house with like a bed and a TV and two chairs. We called it suburban camping. And we just locked ourselves in there and had good internet so we could continue with our lives. But we searched for all this comfort food TV, and we stumbled upon a telenovela. I speak a little bit of Spanish. My husband speaks more. But it was entrancing. Like, we couldn't stop watching it. And it was on regular TV, so we would just stop what we were doing at 5 o'clock, and we would watch this. I wish I could remember the title. It was so stupid.
Oh, my God.
But it was about the nanny. It was essentially the nanny. It was the nanny for the kids. Mm-hmm. It was really the better match than the rich husband's, than the rich father's girlfriend.
Sure.
And by the end, I imagine it runs very much like a soap opera because it was on every day.
Oh, my gosh.
And it
crazy.
Was the best. So silly. Fairies would just appear and start talking to her. It was great.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is awesome.
And I got about 20% of it, but the acting style was so large that, you know, you could follow.
Hell yeah. That's fantastic. So how long were you in New York?
So after college, I went to Memphis for a job for 2 years. And then I moved back to the New York, New Jersey area. I moved back in with my parents when I was 21.
Okay.
22. And then, kind of did the bridge and tunnel thing for a couple of years. And
right.
I think I was in Manhattan for 15 years solid.
Oh my gosh.
But I was in New York for 19.
Wow.
My first audition in New York was the day before 9/11.
Oh my God.
The actual day before.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow, so you were there for all of that. So you can consider yourself officially a New Yorker. You passed the threshold.
Yeah. Well, they say 7 years or the first time you punch a cab.
Right.
Both of which I can check those off.
So for everybody who's listening, we are talking to my very good friend Guy Olivieri, who I have not seen in person since I left New York at the end of 2011. I left right after Christmas. At the end of 2011 is when I moved back to Charlotte.
Wow.
And you've been in Charlotte now since October?
October, yeah.
October of 2020. Mm-hmm. It is now April of 2021. And due to the pandemic, even though you literally live like 10 minutes away,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
10 minutes away from me. We have not been able to actually see each other in person.
I have been in holding.
And here we are, finally. And yes, as he said, you may have seen him on The Blacklist, on Blue Bloods, Better Off Single, Homeland. Did you come to Charlotte to shoot that?
Nope. It was the one season that was in New York.
Royal Pains, Broadcasting Christmas with Melissa Joan Hart and Dean Cain. Yeah.
The greatest thing that's ever happened. I was cut down to one line, but it was still the greatest thing that ever happened. It was so great.
You were on a sitcom called Donnie?
Yeah, Donnie Deutsch's sitcom
for
a season.
That's right. Deception, Gossip Girl, yes. Mm-hmm. You narrated a series for New Kids on the Block?
I did.
You did. You did the national tour of Rent, which I think I knew that, actually, looking back on when I saw that. I was like, I think I knew that. You shared the stage with me. And you're the sign guy.
I'm the sign guy, yeah.
Are you still the sign guy?
Still the sign guy.
So how is that working? Explain, first of all, to the people who don't know, what does that mean that you're the sign guy?
Well, I'm America's Next Top Sign Model. I got a job as an actor several years ago because there's this e-commerce company that sells signs and all sorts of boring stuff. Mm-hmm. They just needed somebody to come in and just be the voice. So be the face that was explaining the product and doing the voiceover and whatever. And once they realized I wasn't an idiot, they started throwing more work at me. And it was a great compliment to my acting life because it was all whenever hours I wanted. And it's now several years later. And I write and I do the voiceover and I shoot the videos. And I was luckily able... When the pandemic hit, I could start doing it from home.
Okay.
So it's actually kind of fun. It's creative and I've made 2,500 videos for them.
Oh my God.
If you can't buy a stop sign on the internet without seeing 3 videos of me trying to sell you that stop sign. So it's not glamorous in any way, but it's kept me, it's been something steady when other stuff hasn't been steady.
That's a fantastic gig.
For sure.
For us.
Sure.
For what we do. Oh my God. So it's not location-based or anything like that? Like, you can literally do it at your kitchen table or something?
I think had the pandemic not happened, I wouldn't have been able to move it with me to Charlotte. But when the pandemic happened, I very successfully did it from my house.
Good for you.
For a couple of months. And then when we decided to move to Charlotte, I was like, here's some evidence of why I can travel with this. Mm-hmm. And they let me keep it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really, really
it's
great.
It's really great. And it's creative. I really enjoy editing, which I didn't know. So I've learned all this sort of editing from doing it. And it's kind of fed into all the other stuff I do.
And you just shoot it yourself?
Yeah, now on my phone. Because the videos are small.
Wow.
Like, they're supposed to be seen, you know, like on YouTube size. So the resolution on a phone is fine.
Dude, that is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic.
It really
has
been great. Which has allowed me to not audition during the pandemic, which
Yeah.
a lot of my friends have been doing, and I was like, I don't feel comfortable doing that, so I'm just going to take myself out of the equation.
Now that you're here, mm-hmm. and you know, because you and I talked about this before you moved, you know that there is a market in the Southeast How are you feeling about picking up the baton again?
Well, first of all, I'd like to publicly thank you for... Sure. I reached out when the move was happening, because you're the person I know best in Charlotte, and you very generously like FaceTimed with me and talked me through some of the stuff. And I have to imagine that I was in some sort of state when we talked. Did I freak you out?
No, I mean, because at the same time, like, we hadn't spoken or seen each other in almost 9 years.
Yeah.
So of course it was going to be kind of disconnected and superficial and like, hey, this is a weird conversation because I'm moving because of a pandemic. So no, I honestly, I didn't think twice about it. Yeah.
Because
whatever
I think
was
that
going
I was,
on, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was a little traumatized by being in New York at the time. Like,
I want to talk to you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole different thing. But, so yes, I'm excited to, I'm going to wait till the summer.
Okay.
Cause I have been on enough sets to know that stuff goes wrong. And I just since I had the luxury of having this other job,
mm-hmm.
and since you know I'm a banker's wife or whatever, so I was not gonna like lose where I live. So I just decided to just stop, full stop, until mm-hmm. this is all much safer.
Yeah.
But the good thing about that is, and I was talking to a friend in New York about this, that like so many New York actors move to New York with this dream and they start moving forward and they have this momentum and they yep. stop realizing why they're doing it. They're just moving forward, you know? And I was definitely caught in that. So now when I go back, I'm going to go back in a way that's healthier for me and that is more focused on the things I want to do instead of the things I think I need to do.
Sure.
You know, so I'm excited about kind of redefining what that is.
Talk to me about the whole New York meltdown, for lack of a better term.
I mean, I don't want to be too
because
dramatic.
I was there, and I remember what my experience was like, and obviously we were there at the same time. So, I mean, I know that it was like I remember New York a certain way, and you actually were there to watch all the, you know, the mayhem kind of happen.
So we're talking about pandemic mayhem, right?
Yeah,
not just general mayhem.
Yes, the thing that finally put you over to bring you here.
Well, the main impetus was this job for my husband. It was like a big thing. But also, you know, like we had thought, we're getting older. He's a little bit older than me even. Like we didn't think that living in the city was going to be healthy for us forever.
Okay.
But this definitely put the gas on the decision.
Right.
But I mean, so, and this is the pandemic culture in Manhattan is so different from the pandemic culture here.
Sure.
You know, like, and it's still kind of hard for me to reconcile the difference. Like, I lost 6 people that I knew.
Oh my God.
2 of whom were in their 50s. And, you know, like, and everybody I know in New York knows a couple of people that they lost. And
wow.
It kind of makes it a different situation.
For
I was
sure.
just talking to a friend up there now, and they're like, in the park still, everybody's wearing 2 masks everywhere. There's like,
really?
There's no casualness about it at all, which I think is great. And that's not what's going on down here. But also, no. It's just not as populous down here. And there's like a different culture. And I'm not throwing stones at whatever anybody's doing.
No, I get it.
Because I also understand that keeping businesses open is important, that social needs are important, and people are managing to get through just fine. And I'm not saying,
yeah.
But when we were still sticking to that culture, even when we got down here.
Mm-hmm.
So we were completely locked down and then we got it.
Which is just, ugh.
Yeah, and it
Come
could
on.
Only have happened at a fully masked grocery store. That was the only place that we had gone
mm-hmm.
in the 2 weeks prior to us getting diagnosed. And I had no symptoms. My husband had very little symptoms. But cosmically, it feels like a kick in the balls.
Now, what made you go, oh, we should go and get tested?
My husband on day 4 was like, I haven't been able to taste anything in a couple of days.
Oh, really?
And we're both like, yeah, but we haven't been anywhere, so it can't be COVID. And he was like, huh. And then we set up appointments and then it was over. But then, I mean, we got off so lucky because it was not a major
sure.
deal. And I know, I mean, besides the people I know who died or had family members who died, I know several people who were having like the long-term side effects too
yeah.
and like are really still in a bad way
yeah.
a year later after having it. So I feel very grateful that we got through it like this. But it kind of informed the way we have been behaving.
Yeah.
But now that we have had it,
mm-hmm.
we're functionally immune and that will last through the time period where we'll get the shots. So,
yep.
so we're kind of done.
Yeah.
And now I refused to do this podcast with you a month ago because
did, and I respected that.
And I know you did. And I didn't give me a bit of crap about it because I was like, this is another person in a room and I can't do that. Because I was still like in that culture and I
sure.
kind of felt awful about it. But I knew you did. I knew you weren't judgy about it.
Nope.
But it's a big relief. You can hear the tension in my voice. It's a big relief
yeah.
that this is like now coming off our plates, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I'm still trying to figure out what the lesson I'm supposed to learn from all this is cosmically. And I don't have my finger on it yet. And I'm going to get, I'll probably have to journal or some BS like that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. I was actually doing an interview with a friend of mine who is in New York now. He moved there right before the pandemic.
Oh, God. Yeah.
He used to live there before, and then he lived in LA for years and years and years, and then he went back to New York. He's the guy who always moves at the wrong time. And we were actually having the same discussion about, you know, obviously we're supposed to, on some kind of cosmic level, we have to think that we're supposed to be learning something from this experience. And the only thing that makes the most sense to me, that allows me to sleep at night, is that this is teaching us or reminding us that we need to take better care of each other.
Yeah.
As humans, as neighbors, as people sharing a planet.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Maybe this is the beginning of the end. It certainly felt like that at times, that it's end of days, you know?
I can also think of 100 inspirational things I saw happen in the last year where people like showed up for other people that, you know, wouldn't have, you know?
Give me one.
So when we wound up in New Jersey, so we wound up in the house that I grew up in, again, completely empty, like mm-hmm. no curtains. We were there for 4 months with no curtains. But the house across the street, the Heberts, they were old when I was a kid, and they're in their 90s, and I had heard they'd gotten sick, and their son-in-law, who was a retired military medic, somehow raised money to get like a camper van to drive it up to their house, to park it on their lawn, put up a station right there where he could decontaminate himself. He put in a full hazmat suit. Whoa. This was like in the first 2 weeks.
Oh, sure.
Got in the house, took care of them, and you could watch it all from our window. Then he'd come back out, he would spray himself down, he'd get out of his suit and get into the camper. And then we saw a story about them on the news, which was done at a great distance. And like this whole community had come together to support this guy going to help his in-laws because there was nobody around that could help them. That was amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. I know that there's actually a lot of stories out there like that, but there have certainly been moments where it's like, I need to hear one of those. I need to, you know, I need to know that that's happening.
And they survived. They're doing great. They're still planting tomatoes in their backyard.
That's so great.
In their mid-90s.
That is so great. That is so great. So let's talk more about you and your wonderful career.
Okay.
So, okay. New Jersey. You went to UNC. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you an offbeat question.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy working with Kate Middleton?
Very much.
By any chance?
Yeah. We went to school together.
You did go to school together.
I talked to her an hour ago. She says hi.
Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot to tell you that.
Thank you. Thank you.
She's doing a George Clooney movie in Boston, and she's locked up in a hotel that she can't leave for at least another week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Clooney movie.
So Kate and I met doing a scene study class in college when we moved to New York. Kate's a mastermind producer. She's a great actress, but she's like a mastermind producer. Mm-hmm. And once we had some like professional experiences, a couple of us from college were like, we actually liked what we did in school, where we had like a black box and mm-hmm. we like collaboratively worked on the play, and everybody had a hand in everything. And so she started off Broadway theater company, which is now in its 17th year.
That's nuts too.
20 something productions.
Oh my gosh.
And I joined after the second one and kind of got on the board. And this is how I know you.
Yeah.
Because we did Barefoot in the Park.
That's
and
right.
We cast you in one of the parts.
Yep.
And it still goes on and it has evolved. And then in the last couple of years, I've started producing, film and
yes.
TV, the stuff that I've been writing myself,
yes.
and Ground Up just co-produced the last thing we did, which happened right before the pandemic, so
right.
it's still a big part of my life.
Yes, I do have notes here that you are a multi-award-winning writer, producer, filmmaker. You know, you started doing short films, and quite a few of them with Kate,
yeah.
And they've done pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to be, when I got real focused on what I wanted mm-hmm. as out of my career, what I wanted was to be a regular on a sitcom.
Sure.
And so that's when I got that focus, I wrote myself a sitcom. That was 6 or 7 years ago. Because that's, you know, you got to bring it to you. If nobody's bringing it to you, you know,
yeah.
you got to make it yourself.
I mean, you know, when I saw you writing about that and posting about that, and you guys had all of the videos to try and, you know, help fund it and raise money.
Yeah.
It did occur to me. I was like, then why the hell did he decide to go to New York if we wanted to be in a sitcom? But of course, I know that you were a big musical theater fan and theater guy and Broadway guy.
It was musical theater.
Yeah.
And then once I got
a lot of sitcom opportunities in New York City.
No, not very much. Hmm. Yeah, there never was much. I mean, I went to New York because I was a musical theater person. And then after a decade of that, I kind of transitioned out. That was so fulfilling and I still love it, but mm-hmm. the lifestyle was kind of killing me.
Okay.
So then I moved into like commercials and voiceovers and tried to make TV and film happen. Sure. And then I found producing 6 or 7 years ago, which kind of like gave me my love for all of it back again.
Yeah. More with Guy in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There's so many podcasts on the network, and you got to go check them out. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com. I'm on the website right now. I mean, like, there's so many. They've grown so much. It's crazy. NewsHounds, the 20-Minute Morning Show, Do Good Charlotte, the Spotlight Podcast, Sessions on 16, What We Wore, Charlotte Readers Podcast, the 1K Podcast. There's too many to read. Parenting Up, Parenting Down. Check that out with my good friend Jen Olin. Sports Charlotte, the 704, I Love Beer. Man, there's too many. I can't read all this. I don't have that kind of time. The Comedy Zone Podcast, Preacher's Kids, Bat Boys, Prime After Prime, Prime After Prime. There you go. I Can Read, The Podcast from Hell. So many of them. Go check it out. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com. They're awesome. All right, here's more with Guy.
How did the writing come about, other than just sitting down and going, okay, I'm going to give this a shot? Or did you have already a background in it to begin with?
I do not have a background. I've watched a lot of TV. That's mostly it.
Right, which you know.
I mean, like, I'm a TV connoisseur. So it all started, I had a moment in life where I was like, oh, this is what I want to do.
Yep.
And then it also had come at a point in my career where I was finally connected to enough people that I just came up with the concept of doing pieces of sitcoms on stage. Mm-hmm. And there was the People's Improv Theater in New York, RIP, which was a victim of the pandemic, was in my neighborhood, and they were willing to just let me have space so that we could do scenes from classic sitcoms.
Wow.
So I put together an ensemble of people. I called people that terrified me because I thought they were so above working with me who knew nothing, and right. Every one of them said yes.
Wow.
And so I got all these amazing people to like do scenes from The Facts of Life with me.
Oh my God.
And we did this a couple times over a couple of months, and then when we were rehearsing one day, somebody mentioned a story about something, and I was like, that'd be a good idea for a sitcom. And we had the whole thing sketched out in like a half an hour. And I was like, I'll see you guys in a month. I'm going to write all of you in with stuff that I know you know how to do well. And we raised $9,000, maybe not much. And we shot the first sitcom pilot, Freak Me.
For Shut Up Astoria.
This was Freak Me. This was six or seven years
okay.
ago.
Okay. Okay.
And then, and no one's connected to anybody. So we wound up just putting it up. So we lost an actress, and we had been doing Facts of Life scenes because they're amazing. Facts of Life episodes are like perfect one act plays. Go back. Like they're unbelievably well put together. And you know who the engine of that show is?
Tell me.
It's Natalie. It's Mindy Cohn. Everything works because Mindy Cohn is the one who's the actual actress in it, and she can drive everything forward.
Sure.
So we lost an actress in Freak Me right before, and they were like, who would be great for this? And I was like, well, it's clearly for Mindy Cohn. And then they're like, that's funny. And I was like, let's go to Twitter. And then a couple of tweets later, I got to her manager. I got to her. I sent her a script. She sent in an audition. A month later, Mindy Cohn was on set with
us. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, and she was amazing. And it was like, she was happy to like, because it was a really kind of dirty part, and she was happy to do something contrary to her type. And she had continued to work. She's the voice of Velma in Scooby-Doo. I think she's got a daytime Emmy, actually. And she had just done she had just starred in like an indie film in New York, and she was bi-coastal. It just, the kismet of it all was amazing. And then, so now I'm like hugging Mindy Cohn as we're like doing the last shot of this sitcom that I wrote that I didn't know I could write.
Did you fan out a little bit?
I tried to be cool about it. But I mean, like, it's so, it that lesson will stick with me forever, that people, if you come with like an open heart and like everybody's excited about it, people will say yes.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not taking advantage of people to say, I know it's only $100, but can you do it? Because every single person on that set had this like amazing experience that they'll never forget, and they were all working for $100, you know?
Right.
And so that, and then once that happened, and like, of course, nobody bought it because I'm not connected to anybody's, but it was creatively super interesting, and it got me clout in the city among other people. And
wow.
Then we did a short film called I Don't Believe in That, which was a little queer short film that I wrote for me and my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that was super successful. That got 100,000 hits on YouTube, and we showed that. It was a finalist for the Iris Prize, which is this giant queer prize. And then we just kept on doing more and more. And then we got to the big project, Shut Up Astoria, which happened right before the pandemic, which was...
Yes.
I wanted to do a three-camera sitcom.
Right.
which had never been attempted by an indie company ever before. So really? I wrote something in that style, and we combined the theater company and my film company, and we got a theater space. Mm-hmm. We built a theater set. Mm-hmm. We got theater lighting. Mm-hmm. We put three cameras on the floor. We put an audience in the house, and we performed it a couple of times so we could sell tickets.
Oh, okay.
And also because we weren't sure we knew what we were doing. Put it together, and we have a three-camera sitcom that was done completely independently.
That is crazy.
And it was
that's fantastic.
The most fun thing I've ever done. I also, the most stressful thing.
I was going to say, how did you not pull your hair out?
I mean, there were times where we, you know, I was doing it with like three of my very, very closest friends.
Right.
And there were times where it almost broke us. And it was fundraising, but also the enormity of it, because it was a huge project. It was an absolutely huge project. But you know how, Brian, do you have this experience? Sometimes you dream about something, and then when you get to that thing, you have to like do a self-check-in to be like, am I enjoying this?
Sure.
Because
absolutely.
I've sacrificed a lot to get here.
Yep.
And if this isn't amazing, then I've done it all wrong. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes. But I mean, isn't it? I feel like that's so common, though, that it's so common.
Yeah.
You know, if for no other reason than you want it so badly.
Yeah.
You want it to, because if it shits the bed, if it falls through, then you're like, oh my God, what have I been doing?
That's a crisis. That's
yeah.
a crisis in a nutshell right there.
Yeah.
But when we were performing this thing, I was like, absolutely, this is exactly what I wanted it to be.
Good.
Because it's all the thrill of theater with none of the pressure of it, because if you mess it up, you just start over. You get the audience stuff. Since I'd also written it, every time something didn't work, we would just change a joke, you know? And it was, I had such creative control over it, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And it was, it's available online.
I want to see, because I didn't get to see it when you guys first released it.
Yeah, we opened it up for another window right now, because
okay.
we were supposed to keep it locked for festivals and stuff like that.
Right.
But the festivals are all,
yeah.
who knows when they're happening,
exactly.
so we kind of opened it up again, so.
Yes. But I did want to see it, because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. This is such a great idea. And knowing you and Kate and Ground Up as well as I do, I was like, this makes total sense.
Yeah.
It makes total sense. So, I can't imagine what your days and nights and how many hours you put into it. Whew. And how your husband must have been like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There was a lot of like...
I mean, because he works for Bank of America.
Yeah.
You're an actor. I mean,
you need a little yin-yang.
That's a sitcom in itself.
Yeah. You need a little yin-yang. Like, he's mm-hmm. he's creative in different ways. Like, he speaks five languages. Like, he's
Whoa.
That, like, when I get dorky about, like, the satellite radio Broadway channel, he's like, I just learned this new phrase in Dutch that's blowing my mind.
Oh, my God.
And people who are passionate about anything are the best people in the whole world. He's passionate about that. But so there were a lot of times where I would have to be like, I need to stand outside and pace a while. Because my best friends, I want to crack their heads open.
Sure.
You know? But that's just fundraising. Fundraising is the absolute worst.
No.
I had somebody give me great advice when we were fundraising for this, who's a professional fundraiser for mm-hmm. a theater, the theater I worked for in Memphis. He was like, he said that, you know how you can't be in a successful relationship until you're totally okay with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you can't successfully fundraise until you're totally okay with the project. And he was like, the moment that you realize that you have a project that's good, that's worthwhile, and you can like start to love it the way that you know people are going to love it, then you can start selling it. And I was like, that's great advice. And with that in mind, I was able to ask people for money. But it was a challenge every single time. I had to like coach myself up for it every single time. We posted a video or... You know,
did you do a TV show in Germany?
Well, this is another weirdie. this German company, they were doing like their TV shows of the week.
Okay.
And they would shoot them to be dubbed in many, many languages.
Oh, wow.
So the German crew came to the Hudson Valley, like right above New York City,
yep.
to film four movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we were instructed to learn the sides in English.
Okay.
They would be performing in German. We would reply in English. And they would just dub us over later because everybody was getting dubbed over.
So wait, so were you on camera or were you the dubbed voice?
I was on camera.
Okay.
And you know, some...
it was called Katie Ford or something like that?
Yeah, she's the writer.
Okay.
I think it's like movies of the week for them.
Okay.
I had
okay.
a friend living in Germany and she was like, you're on my TV. It's not your voice. So yeah, like this like absolutely stunning German woman is screaming at me in German. And I was like, I think she's giving me the line. I think she's giving my cue. And then I would say the line in English. Had whole scenes, like very long
wow.
scenes, and I never saw them.
You've never seen it?
Never saw them.
Oh man,
I made a good amount of money though.
That's awesome.
That's a weirdie.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like you do, you've got some interesting things here in your body of work.
Yeah.
I do also have to ask you, dude. I'm going through your IMDb when I'm, you know, getting ready to have this conversation with you. The mustache photos.
I am a man over 40. It's a viable option. Nobody loves it but me.
You're either a British uptight pencil pushing, you know, detective, or you're gonna get beat up real soon.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know. All right. It's like this guy. I'm looking at, because again, I know you at least somewhat, and I'm like, I honestly love how it looks on you, but I'm like, I'm wondering what the hell he is using these for. Where are they?
Why did I do it this time? I had to do it for something. Oh, I was doing it for an audition. It doesn't matter. But I was doing it for something that never happened.
Okay.
And I was like, let's get some headshots while this is happening. I love it.
Because you grow a great mustache. And the fact that you had more than one is why it stood out. I was like, this is for a reason. This isn't just like, hey, this is what I look like with a mustache. There was multiple. So I was like, no, this is for a reason. So what's the point?
Tell me if this happened to you, too. Okay. Like, commercial. I made most of my money in the last 20 years doing on-camera commercials.
Okay.
Most of it on-camera commercials. And as I got older, I moved through different types that were very clearly linked to jobs. Like, I was a student, and then I was a guy in aprons for a while. Then I was, like, young dad and best men. And then I moved into, somehow, maintenance people. Like,
really?
I actually shot a commercial in Charlotte where I was a maintenance guy right before this.
Oh my God.
And I became like store managers and maintenance. And I was like, well, maybe if I lean into this, maybe this might be a thing that might help.
Okay, so now that makes more sense, but that I that never would have occurred to me. I would not have ever thought about that.
See, I'm taking what you're saying, and I'm turning it into, you look amazing with a mustache, and I'm going to take that home.
No, I honestly did, because you can pull off a mustache, no problem, because you grow a good mustache. It's very, very good. But I was like, what is he using this for? And I'm learning something new. Mm. I would not have put you in maintenance. I would not have expected to see you in maintenance, I guess.
Yes, I've been jangling keys and wearing jumpsuits, yes, more than a few times. I actually came to Charlotte to do a commercial for Money Lion, which was connected to NASCAR, so I got to go to the NASCAR, which I'm sure is a dream come true for somebody. It meant nothing to me, but the whole time it was very reverential, because I was in there, like, in the actual place where the cars were being serviced. And
oh wow!
And but I was a guard, and it was like an overnight thing, and it was this weird experience. And they cast out of New York when they clearly could have cast out of Charlotte, because there's nothing too special about me. Yeah. I think that it makes the production company gets a little excited if they're bringing in somebody from outside, you know, like,
sure.
Just, I think it like gives a little shine to it, even though I'm 100% sure the talent is here.
So how are you going to deal with not having that theater family and all that stuff here? Or are you just going like, let's see how this goes, and I can commute back and forth if I need to, or how's that going to work out?
Well, I in my mind, I have a two-pronged approach. One of which, it's very important that I'm here, because in order for me to make that happen, I have to be here. But so there's a Christmas movie that I wrote that I think we're going to try to shoot next with my people in New York.
Okay.
So I think what's actually going to be nice is I can't be the lead producer because I'm not there. So my producing partner is going to have to do a little more of the work. So it actually might be easier for me, but I think that's the next thing we're going to do up there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm really interested in Charlotte is putting together another family, you know, putting together another group of people, actors, technicians, directors. And I would love, I'm just putting it out in the universe and on the internet that, like, that's what I want. Specifically, I've written a pilot, another three camera pilot, that's got, the leads are three super young people, so like college age people, mm-hmm. and then a couple of older people. And I would love to find people down here, if anybody has access to a studio. I don't know if that even exists, or if there's a theater space where it could be done. If there's people who are interested in collaborating on stuff, I have a track record, and I'm not a bad writer, and I've done a lot of producing. So if anybody, I can't wait to get the opportunity to meet people who can like help make these things congeal again. And I would love to have, you know, a community down here like the one I have in New York, or somebody who wants to give me enough money to bring the people from New York down here. I have seven pilots ready to go. I have a series of short films ready to go. I have all this material that, you know, for one reason or another hasn't happened yet. But and it's the most fun thing in the whole world. Mm-hmm. Like starting from scratch and like having the thing,
yeah,
is the best. So, you know, I'm not gonna drop that. That's gonna have to be a part of my life wherever I am.
Well, that's incredibly exciting for you, and it's exciting for me to hear, because while I hate that you are having to kind of just start over, although that can be very exciting, I know it can also be kind of like, what the hell. I'm really glad that you're here. I'm really, really glad that you're here, because there's a great deal of potential. There's a great deal of potential and possibility and opportunity.
It doesn't feel like starting over. Because of the pandemic, we've all been just separated anyway. I've kept in touch with everybody probably the exact amount of time I would have kept in touch with them. It's like a very cheap flight. There's no reason that people couldn't go back and forth and like,
absolutely.
And I know that I have something to offer. So I don't think it's gonna if this community exists down here, I know that I can get into it. Mm-hmm. You know,
hell yeah.
Are you familiar with the 48-hour film project?
Oh yeah,
it's my favorite thing in the whole world. We've done it in New York a couple of times. We won New York twice,
and they do it here.
And I remember specifically one year the Charlotte. I wish I could remember the title, but the Charlotte winner that mm-hmm. we saw like at the global competition was so strong. Yep. And I even sent them a message because they didn't make it. And I just told them how great it was. So I know it exists down here.
Yep.
I got to find what the name of that and reconnect with and sure. find those people and say, hey.
Are you a little bummed that you never got to do Law and Order?
I am.
Yeah.
I definitely am.
That badge of honor for New York actors.
I've listened to enough of your shows to know that
all the New York people.
No, that Guy is to Law and Order as Brian is to Army Wives. I can't
You have listened enough. Wow. You've auditioned that many times.
I can't tell you how many times I've been on hold even. And for such a variety of roles. Mm-hmm. The last time I was on hold, it was one of the more politically complicated auditions I ever had, because it was for a gender non-binary character.
Oh, jeez.
And it came across, and it came from my agent, and I was like, okay, you know, if gender really is a spectrum, how I behave is on that spectrum. And I don't see any reason to behave any way other than exactly as I am in this audition.
Right.
And so I went in and just behaved exactly as I am. Mm-hmm. And I was on hold for it. It got bumped and bumped. And then eventually, I don't know what happened for it. It might have even been cut. I don't know if it was cut or if it ever happened. I didn't see the episode. But I mean, like, for criminals, for people who were bloodied, for like major D's, like just easily 30 auditions over the 15 years I was there.
Yeah.
It's a little abuse.
Yeah, that sucks. All right. Fine. Damn it. Do you still enjoy acting more than anything else, as far as the whole, I mean, because you've gotten into the writing, you've done the producing and the acting, and that's what got you started. Is that still what keeps you in it, or are you like in it? No.
No. It's the completion of a project. It doesn't even have to be something that I created. It's the full spectrum of starting something from beginning to end, whether it's theater or whether it's a movie or a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I still love the acting, but it's almost a relief when you get to the acting part, because like, I know how to do that. You know, everything else is so complicated up until then. So, I mean, I'll always do it. And honestly, I miss musicals. It's been a while since I've done a musical. I would really love to do that again.
Sure.
But yeah, and it's now like I have become a creator, as they say. Like, that's the thing that I'm always going to pursue. And keep the other things open as well.
What was it like for you when you first got to New York?
Well, let's see. When I first got to New York, again, 9/11 happened the day after my first audition.
Talk to me about the wide-eyed guy.
Well, were so after like everybody college, else? Yeah. I went to SETC and I got an internship.
Sure you did.
Which I'm sure many people have done. Got an internship in Memphis for a year.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the year, they hired me as a company member for a year. And I had thought of maybe going to grad school, but when I looked back, I had done 700 and something performances. I had done 17 plays. Ooh. I had understudied so much stuff that I was like, I'm educated. Like, I've got my 10,000 hours. I'm ready to go.
Yep.
I don't think that had been established as the rubric for being an expert yet. But so I went to New York, and I wanted to do all sorts of stuff, but the thing that was most marketable is I could sing. And so I just started going to singing auditions.
Okay.
And I absolutely love it. I'm not a dancer though.
Okay.
I mean, that was always difficult getting to the dance call and getting cut. But the social life was amazing.
Heck
you know, like it was so much fun. There were so many people, my age who were like just, we were, you know, we're non-equity at the time, we'd just go to the open calls and like hang out all day and then go to the audition and then go to the gay bar and have a cheeseburger at the gay bar, you know, and then like, and then drink margaritas in Worldwide Plaza. Oh, and then, God. You know, maybe you would work and maybe leave for a while and come back and worked other like crappy jobs to like, to put everything together. And it was super fun.
Yep.
And then we all got a little older and it got less and less fun. All he wanted out of my musical theater career was to do Rent. And when I got to do the tour of that, I was like, check, everything is gravy after this. Like, dream come true material. I will never complain about it ever again.
Who did you play in Rent?
I played Mark.
You did?
Yeah, on the road for a year.
Wow.
From Alaska to Florida. And it was everything I wanted to be. It didn't disappoint in any way.
Yeah.
And then a couple years later, I was still doing theater and like... right after I met you, we did Barefoot in the Park. Yep. I played Seymour in Little Shop in this like summer stock that was, I mean, I could, Rent and Little Shop are my favorite things in the whole world. And I was doing it and it was a great theater and everything was going well. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I had this like whole, like big, I had a big crisis where I was like, that thing that I thought I wanted to do this whole time, I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah.
Have you had that?
I might have, and I don't want to admit it, or I haven't wanted to admit it.
I mean, theater is like a punishment sometimes.
Well, see, now that's a little different for me because I don't do theater as often. And when I do, like, again, Colleen will tell you, she's like, you're a different person. And she means that in a good way. She is like, you just... because I'm very selective to what theater productions that I do nowadays and who I'm working with and all that stuff. And so if I am doing something, it's because I really want to do it, you know. But I mean, the grind of just, again, going through, especially in the New York lifestyle as an actor, of going to the auditions, hoping to get offered something, you know, and what you can... Correct me if I'm wrong, but 9 times out of 10, you're getting offered a theater contract that's not going to pay your rent for the time that you're doing the show.
You would go into debt every time you left town. Yeah. And then I also realized that like in musical theater, you wind up getting stuck with understudies and swings a lot more than which I don't have the constitution for. I've done it a couple of times and it's like ulcer inducing. And I was, that was the first thing to go. I was like, I'm not doing that anymore. But luckily as that was happening, I clicked into a commercial type, my first one.
Yep.
And money was coming in that way. And I always wanted to do TV anyway. I just wished that I had the foresight in my 20s to know that, like, that I was going to be a writer, that I was going to be a TV actor, that all these things that I didn't think were possible because I just didn't have the education or the exposure. Sure. You know, I just had theater.
Right.
That's kind of the biggest regret of my 20s. I just wish that I had looked ahead and been like, oh, that's a thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because Or maybe I wasn't ready. I don't know. Maybe I was ready the exact right time. I'm not sure. Because I truly have no regrets about how it's all gone down.
Hell no. Yeah.
So then I stopped doing musical theater. I still did some stuff in the city every now and then. I did a production in the Village over 4 or 5 years. That was a great little... it was called The Greenwich Village Follies. It was this great cabaret show that made me half of my favorite friends in the whole world, which is in the same theater we did Barefoot in the Park.
Yes.
Which is now completely empty and has been for quite a few years.
Is it really?
Yeah. When NYU expanded, they bought the building.
Oh, wow.
And they never expanded. So it's been sitting empty for 7 or 8 years. It's one of the biggest tragedies.
What was the name of that space again?
Manhattan Theater Source.
That's right. Manhattan Theater Source.
Mm-hmm. They lost the space because they couldn't afford the rent, and it's been sitting empty, and it is the saddest thing. I would walk by all the time. I had the greatest memories. Like, that was a great, cheap, off-Broadway theater where I saw some of the most mind-blowing theater I've ever seen, and it's just been sitting empty, and it's a real shame.
I still remember our production of Barefoot in the Park that our good friend Lon Baumgartner directed, who's still my favorite. I remember specifically because it was my first play in New York City. It was Lon's first play, you know, in New York City, and the reviews, you know, the New York reviews come out and they compared us to the recent Broadway production.
Yep.
And how we blew it out of the water in this little tiny space that we were in. And they were like, this is way better. Yeah. And I was walking on cloud nine. I was like, I cannot believe that we just got compared to a Broadway production with name A-list actors and how,
I mean, first of all, it should be said that like Kate and I, this was maybe our, Kate is ground up production. She is the driving force of it, but I've been on the board for a while and it was such a get for us to get you and Lon because like, you're like, you know, like top tier talent who just didn't happen to be New York talent yet. Mm-hmm. So, and we had just the space and the cachet of that. So like like much like Mindy Cohen, you ask and you get when you like are in that, in when you have that kind of power. So like getting you guys, your part was so small, so such a misuse of your talent.
But I had so much fun doing it though, man.
Yeah,
I had so much fun doing it.
But you know, we had enough PR knowledge to get the Times review and to get the Variety review and the Backstage review, and it was really a positive. They did call me fat. They said I played Paul, and they were like, he looks like a college athlete who's just started to let himself go. Which is, it's nice they called me athletic, because that's not true. But yeah, I got called fat by the New York Times. But the flip side of that is we did the Greenwich Village Follies I was talking about in that same space, which was beloved, and we did it on and off for years. Mm-hmm. And the Times guy came, had a bad night. He brought a kid with him for very dirty show.
Whoa.
His kid was doing crossword puzzles with a lighted pen the entire time. We got a bad review and the show just closed. Like, and it's really fickle. And the power that the Times has over theater in New York is really not okay.
Crazy. It's crazy.
But it's, but Bear from the Park was a very, very positive experience. And it's a shame I'm too old to do it again, because I would totally do it again.
Right? absolutely. I would too. It's been great to catch up with you. I'm so glad that we were finally able to get together face to face and actually see each other and talk. And
I got to meet your dog.
See how you're doing. Absolutely. I can't tell you how glad I am that you're here. And I think I'm looking forward to finding out how this was supposed to be. You know what I mean? Because I feel like it was. And so I'm interested to see how the journey unfolds for you and for your husband, and see what's next, and how you're going to relax into everything.
The best things in your life usually happen concurrently with a change, you know? And we were very proud of ourselves that we like walked towards the change instead of something happening that made it happen.
Right.
You know, like we had the option, we had the moment, and so we decided to make a big change.
Well, man, again, I'm so glad that you're here, and I look forward to spending more time with you now that you are here.
I'm excited too.
This has been You May Have Seen with Guy Olivieri. Thanks so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.